Welcome to Breaking Point, a Brighteon.com exclusive video series featuring the top thinkers and analysts of our time. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, a free speech video platform, but you won't be hearing much from me today. This series highlights the critical messages of people like John Rubino, David Morgan, David Dubin, Judy Mikovits, Gregory Mannarino, Michael Snyder, Zach Voorhees, and many others, all of whom carry an urgent warning for humanity, that we are at the breaking point for human civilization. And if we don't come to our senses and pivot now, we simply won't make it. Civilization cannot continue on this current trajectory. And the future of our world, for all of us, is what's at stake. Each of the 12 episodes is released for free at Brighteon.com over the next few months. Here are the 12 topics we cover. Financial collapse, food collapse, energy collapse, vaccines, supply chains and logistics, depopulation, World War III, collapse of the rule of law, artificial intelligence and big tech, the spiritual war against humanity, censorship and oppression, and the Great Reset. In each episode, you'll hear uncensored talk about the nature of the challenges humanity is facing, along with potential solutions that can help see us through these tribulations if we are wise enough to correct our course right now. All episodes are being posted on Brighteon, Rumble, BitChute, and other platforms, and we invite you to repost these episodes on your own channels across multiple platforms. Today, we bring you Chapter 1, Financial Collapse. The world is facing the end of the era of fiat currencies, money printing, and debt-based economic growth. Inflation is eviscerating savings and incomes, and widespread civil unrest will present unprecedented challenges to the integrity of nations. Today we hear from top experts and analysts like John Rubino, David Morgan, Gregory Mannarino, Bill Holter, Andy Scheckman, and many more. Welcome to Breaking Point, Episode 1, Financial Collapse.
This story begins in 1971, when most of the world's governments were on something called the gold standard, which was a monetary system that limited how much new currency any given government could create. And governments, of course, hated this because they want to be able to invade their neighbors and buy elections and do all the other things that, governments do. And finally, in 1971, the U.S. broke the last link between the world's currencies, now called fiat currencies, because they exist only by government decree or fiat and aren't backed by anything.
What nation doesn't want to have the world reserve currency, okay? Or a basket of various currencies used as a world reserve? What are we seeing here for many, many years? We're watching a race to the bottom with regard to fiat currencies, these central banks trying to outpace each other, but they're all working together at the same time. But eventually, how I do see this playing out, this is another major world war, and that this would be the fuel for it, would be to, again, threaten the petrodollar. What have we done to establish the petrodollar? We fought in entire wars. We continue to fight wars about that. Vietnam was really to establish the petrodollar, the fiat monetary system, to get that going. How many people died with regard to that? It's always the same story. It always leads to the demise of people to support a system that has been twisted and perverted into something hideous.
There is no more road for us to kick the can down. And it's compounded by the fact that the people in charge are intentionally crashing the system. I mean, so much of this is contrived. I think any honest broker would acknowledge that this day was inevitable. Whenever you remove our currency off the gold standard and it is no longer backed by something of substantive value that is fair and equitable across the globe, it's been backed up by sort of nothing but the belief in the system.
I feel part of what's occurring is a staged financial collapse. I think that that's becoming more obvious with each day. But I think that, you know, I think like a controlled implosion of a building, you can collapse an economy and have a plan for salvaging those pieces that you desire and letting go the things that you don't want to desire. So it's sort of the odds can be stacked towards the person controlling the implosion. And I think in this case, it's going to be very interesting to see that a period of darkness will make people desperate enough to have sort of a relief when the financial houses switch them back on, but say, okay, well, we need to do it this way because of the financial collapse, but don't worry, your assets are safe, but they've now all just been, you know, changed over. And, you know, it's just sort of like a rebranding of a bank.
History shows us that nations go to war to establish monetary dominance. Once achieved, that dominance is abused through money printing and devaluation. At some point, the debt becomes unmanageable, and the system has to be reset with a currency collapse. This has happened hundreds of times throughout known human history. And each time it happens, gold and silver outlast the chaos and emerge as true intrinsic assets that hold value.
I don't buy pieces of paper. I buy the actual metal. I hold the actual metal. And, you know, not in my house. I'm not going to tell you that. But I do hold the actual metal in a way that I can get at it. So I think that's the critical aspect here. And it's important to remember the story of the London bullion. And what happened was somebody called their note. They wanted the gold that they had deposited in the exchange. And come to find out, they were doing fractional banking with precious metals. So there was a huge bloodbath for quite a long time while they had to buy gold at a higher price to give it to the people they owed the gold to. So keep that in mind, that in a time of real monetary collapse, unless you hold the physical gold, it doesn't matter.
Many, many people today know and they feel that there's something really wrong. They don't know what it is, and they're becoming defensive. And just from instinct, they're going to gold and silver, just because they've been money for 5,000 years. And I think the average person deep down understands that if you hold a piece of paper, it's a piece of paper, it's a promise. Whereas an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver, it doesn't promise anything at all. All it is proof that labor, capital, equipment have already been used to create that.
Gold and silver are forms of money that we've used for thousands of years, and they differ from today's fiat currencies in one very fundamental way. They don't have counterparty risk. In other words, nobody has to keep a promise for gold and silver to hold their value because they've held their value for 3,000 years. Whereas the dollar only has value if the U.S. government supports it in a coherent and trustworthy way.
For almost 80 years, the dollar and treasuries, U.S. treasuries, were the only tier one reserve asset. And now it becomes a complement to gold, which was also now a tier one reserve asset and the only other one in the world. This is a big deal. And obviously the Bank of International Settlements let the European banks know that this was coming. So they started 2 years early accumulating and repatriating their gold because now it's tier one. It is riskless. The only other tier one reserve asset in the world next to US dollars and treasuries. A huge deal. And what will the role of silver and gold be after a currency collapse? They will be wealth. Wealth that is not simultaneously someone else's liability. They've been wealth for 6,000 years, and you can see exactly that when the chips are down. The central banks of the world are keenly interested not only in accumulating gold, but taking possession of it and removing that counterparty risk. So I would take my chances on 5,000-year-old history of gold and silver as wealth, and the directions that the central banks of the world are taking us, and the reclassification of gold as a tier one reserve asset, and stand back and look at the de-dollarization and the agreements that are being set that represent 90% of human population, and guess who's not part of it? The U.S.
The world's central banks are all in this together now. It used to be that one country would screw up its currency in the context of a sound money world. In other words, the rest of the world was on a gold standard and they weren't seeing inflation or anything. They were doing fine. But one country tried to break free from the gold standard and inflated its currency away and had a huge collapse. Today, everybody's making those mistakes at the same time, which means two things. One, we were able to keep it going much longer than we would have otherwise. And two, when it happens, it's going to be epic. It's going to be global. You know, like right now with the 10 or 12 or 15% inflation that we're seeing in most parts of the world, that number could go a lot higher everywhere, not just in one country. So we could see, well, something we've never seen before, a global hyperinflation.
No one wants to be a prophet of doom. But in the unlikely event of an all-out financial collapse, silver will be the money of last resort, not gold. Silver has a smaller unit value than gold does, and because of that, you'd be able to buy groceries, gasoline, that type of thing. Does that mean it'd be pervasive, that it'd be everywhere and always? The answer is no, it wouldn't. There'll be places where it will be readily available and used, and there'll be areas that you would probably have to educate the population, or maybe a certain community decides they want to make their own currency and do it in terms of labor hours or whatever. Those systems can work. So it's not a hard yes, gold and silver everywhere, but it's the most likely to take place globally.
Throughout history, no government has been able to resist the siren song of endless currency printing. Once a currency is decoupled from gold and silver, it inevitably leads to not just runaway inflation, but also the eventual end of the empire. Plagued with corruption, bribery, payoffs, and fraud, we are at this stage now in America. At over $31 trillion in national debt and over $173 trillion in unfunded liabilities, how this ends was never in doubt. It ends with runaway inflation and currency collapse.
70% of every dollar ever created in the history of this country was done so in the last 2 years. And we pay people to sit on the couch, play video games, and eat bonbons instead of being out there producing. So you have a massive amount of currency injected into the system and people being less productive, producing less stuff. So you got more money chasing less stuff and less productivity. That sounds like inflation to me.
They go back through history and take a look. I mean, countries never regain that power again. I mean, you look at what was the dominant currencies from Spain or England, Netherlands. Go back, you know, 1600s, 1500s. You know, they have the apex position, but they've never regained it since. What's that been? 400 years, 300 years, 200 years? It just doesn't come back. It moves and shifts. And the next set of dominant currencies take over, and there's a shelf life on that. That's the whole thing to understand. There's a shelf life on everything we've tried now. So the length that a nation is viable or a system of governance that's viable is around 270 years, 275 years. That's the average. There's a shelf life. The average length of dominant currency on the planet has a shelf life. We've come to the end of that. And I encourage everybody to look back through history to see what was the most dominant currency in 1750 or 1650. Or 1550. You think they were running around all these oceans with pieces of eight because they had a multi-basket of currencies? No, there was one dominant player. And it's been like that. The British pound, you know, all the way until the collapse in the early 1900s of their empire, was the number one currency.
So the Federal Reserve is going to be hamstrung in trying to respond to this new crisis. Our leaders, you know, maybe they'll try to spend more money, but they're going to be limited in what they can do because they don't want to create too much more inflation. So, you know, we've got this inflation monster we didn't have the last time around, 2008, 2009. We didn't have high inflation. So our politicians and the Federal Reserve felt that there was more that they could do, but they can't do it this time around because they want to fight inflation. They consider inflation a higher risk.
This is the lie that's being propagated by the mainstream, you know, I call it the propaganda ministry. It's always the same thing. It's a distraction. Look here, don't look over here. So what we have here again is the lie that, okay, Look what the Fed's doing with the overnight rate. Look what the Fed's doing here, or the European Central Bank, whatever. Those are the main two culprits here. When one does one thing, another one must follow suit. And, you know, it's quantitative tightening. Show me it. OK, it's nonsense. It's not happening. It's not going to happen, because the end game is very simple. The Fed wants to continue to inflate, just as the ECB wants to do, period, the end. And they're going to use every mechanism possible and things we can't even dream about to continue that mechanism, whether it's monkeypox, different versions of COVID, expanding of wars, or backdoor quantitative easing. That's the way it's going to play out.
Perfect example of that is all these checks that they're sending out, and now they're going to send out another $2,000 to everyone. That is so inflationary. It's inflationary from the standpoint of they're creating the money out of thin air, which they had done for years and years and years, but they didn't give it to the public. It went into the banking system, and it allowed the banks to fake that they were still solvent. Now they're giving it to the people, and what are the people doing with it? They're buying stuff. And they're buying stuff at the same time that the supply chains are not cranking out as much stuff as they were before, when there wasn't this much money out there. So obviously, you're going to see prices go higher, and you're going to see more shortages.
Savers are going to be big losers because of inflation eating away at the inherent principle underneath the currency. So you may have the same money in your bank, but next year it'll buy half as much because of the cost of everything going up. And that's not something that's probably going to slow down anytime soon. So I think the biggest losers are going to be people in the market, people who maybe have rehypothecated assets, meaning that someone else is responsible for selling the same asset multiple times to multiple parties, which is very common with stocks, or people who have counterparty risk. Perhaps they have a lot of money in a bank account, but maybe that bank can't or won't honor them. Maybe there's going to be a bank run like we've seen in China. So, you know, anytime there's a counterparty risk in a situation like this, I think you're looking at a game of musical chairs. And I think that those are going to be the big losers.
It's important to understand that what's coming isn't this unique thing that has never happened in human history. In fact, the opposite is true. Governments screw up their currencies all the time. If you Google list of hyperinflations, you'll get a page and a half of names of countries, some of them big, serious countries, that borrowed too much money, created too much new currency to cover all the debts that they'd taken on, and then seen the value of their currency plunge. At an accelerating rate until people just gave up on the currency. And so you see, what used to be, let's say, a dollar become $1 trillion, something like that, to buy the same product. And there's some really dramatic photos of the Weimar Germany hyperinflation, in which you see people with wheelbarrows full of cash going to the grocery store, or dumping suitcases full of cash into the furnace to heat the house. That's how much value was lost by the currency.
As the dollar collapses and is dethroned from its world reserve currency status, BRICS nations like China, Russia, and India are in the final stages of rolling out a new world reserve currency that's backed by gold. Unlike the dollar, which is backed only by the full faith and credit of a corrupt, collapsing empire that now oversees political prisoners and rigged elections.
We're going to be responsible for sourcing their having value CBDCs on the open market. It's not going to work the other way around. They're not going to exchange dollars at that point. So I'm looking ahead going, all right, well, how do we take what is value of something in America and transmit it into a digital system of units of one into the BRICS basket so we can buy something from those nations participating?
United States, NATO, Western nations, their sanctions against Russia, a lot of people say they backfired because our economy is now the one being hit. Russia's economy is only being marginally hit compared to ours. And Europe's economies are fading much faster than even ours. So you can directly attribute that to the sanctions. Did they fail? I think not. I think that what they are telling us the sanctions were supposed to do, it's not what they were really supposed to do. They're doing exactly what they were supposed to do, which is to destabilize Western economies, not Russia's. Russia can go to China. They can go to any of the BRICS nations, and now they're adding more BRICS nations. They will, in the near future, account for over half of the wealth in the world. That will make them essentially more powerful than G7, more powerful than the United States of America. And they will make a play to have the world reserve currency, especially if they're able to get their central bank digital currency out and working properly before us. If they can get wide adoption, we're in big trouble. The ruble is doing well, the dollar is not. The dollar's doing better than the euro, though.
The ruble is going to become the predominant currency, in my opinion. US dollar is going to face total annihilation. And when people see exactly what it's like to put those sanctimonious sanctions on Russia, be without fuel, be without heat, be without food, there's going to be a cry go up worldwide that people are going to turn to the United States and see the United States as the pariah nation it is.
Are we next if we decide to move on Taiwan the way that Russia was sanctioned? Are they going to freeze our assets? You see, when you weaponize the U.S. dollar, I believe you make a grave mistake. As the world reserve currency, you should not be allowed to say who can and who cannot use the currency.
Debt. It's a luxury when you have the power to create it. It's a liability when you own it. And it's a death sentence when it grows out of control. The entire U.S. currency system originates with debt that's irreconcilable. It was never even designed to be resolved, but rather to be reset. Wipe the slate clean. Default on the people. Blame a convenient scapegoat and launch the whole scam anew for another few generations of enslaved workers, while telling them they could all get ahead if they just worked harder.
I think it won't be too long before the final crisis happens, when something so big goes wrong that governments, no matter how much new currency they create, aren't able to fix it. And there's a good chance that we're near there now, because inflation is now at 10% in official terms in the U.S. and much higher in some other parts of the world. So trying to fix this with higher interest rates might break the system in a way that cannot be fixed with newly created currency after the system breaks. So we're liable to see the end of the fiat currency, fractional reserve banking, unlimited government growth system in the next few years, with all the chaos that implies.
And there's no way out. I mean, the global elite have tried to kick the can down the road by just because the only way to keep the game going is to increase the money supply, to create more and more money so the debt bubble can get bigger and bigger and bigger, because the only way it can sustain itself is to keep expanding, keep increasing.
People have asked many times how long before fiat currencies collapse. First, just go to the facts. Fiat always fails, my famous three-line moniker. And the idea is that there's never been any fiat that didn't fail in all of recorded history. We are failing now. The 1913 dollar, which was worth 100 pennies, is now worth about two. So we've had a 98% failure rate. So we're really asking, how long is that 2 cents going to work? And the answer is no one knows for sure. I give it 3 years at best. I think we're in the final stages of a currency collapse. And in a currency collapse, everyone goes to what they trust the most. The U.S. dollar is the most trusted piece of paper on the planet. And because of that, you'll see a run of the dollar before you see the ultimate demise of the dollar. So look for dollar strength before the collapse.
What clued me in to begin with was the credit problem. There's just too much debt outstanding. It can never be paid back. It has to default. It has to either default through non-payment or through hyperinflation. And another way to describe hyperinflation would be a currency collapse. Now understand that currency is debt-based itself. So does the currency collapse because credit collapses, or does credit collapse because the currencies collapse?
If fiat currencies collapse, the existing financial infrastructure behind commerce, food production, and energy distribution collapses with it. This means communities and nations will have to quickly organize a new means of exchange, or everybody starves. What might that system look like? History gives us some answers.
We'll just have to start trading here in the United States again amongst ourselves for what limited resources there are, until we can actually manufacture something of value to export, where somebody would trade that and give us back the BRICS money so then we can on-sell it. So it's going to be a very different world for the average person. Now, that's on the business end, but for the average person out here, subsistence, living again, is the closest I could imagine. Pioneering lifestyle. I wouldn't say subsistence or surf living, but we're going to rewind the clock to maybe 1850 and a pioneering lifestyle existence for most everybody that will be, in society, which you consider lives in neighborhoods now. They're going to be living with a lifestyle quality equivalent to 1850 again.
And so the Federal Reserve, they know it's bad. They're desperate to get things under control. They're saying, we're going to keep raising interest rates until we get inflation under control. Well, good luck with that, because, you know, interest rates is not the only factor here. We've just pumped in trillions and trillions of dollars into the financial system. If you look at charts of M1 and M2, they've been rising at an exponential rate. You know, raising interest rates is not going to change that equation. But what it will do is it'll push us into a recession, then a depression. And if they keep doing it, and that's going to destroy demand because we're going to be in a recession. And that's going to further harm the housing market. And housing prices are going to have to come down and down and down. And then people are going to be underwater. And because we're going to be in a recession, millions of people are going to lose their jobs again, just like we saw last time. Well, then suddenly people aren't going to be able to pay their mortgages. In fact, about 2/3 of the country is living paycheck to paycheck right now. And it's going to be even worse as we get into the recession, as people lose their jobs.
You go back to 1913. That's when the Federal Reserve began. And if you read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Isle, I encourage everyone to read that book. That was the game plan. Get the United States, the only way to take the United States down was to do it internally. And what they've done is they've gotten individuals, corporations, the whole system, the government, everything is grossly in debt. And once you have total debt saturation, which we have now, and then you force or create a depression, and that's what they're doing by raising interest rates. They're raising interest rates on the biggest debt bubble in the history of history. What would you expect? Total collapse.
Time and time again throughout history, fiat currencies were collapsed and replaced with new conventional fiat. But today, thanks to advances in technology and cultural familiarity with cryptocurrencies, the governments of the world are working to transition people to digital currencies, controlled by governments and central banks. These are not cryptocurrencies, decentralized and largely unregulated. No, they are government-run surveillance currencies that are designed to monitor and control your use of money while forcing you to accept government dictates, such as vaccine mandates and limits on purchases of fuel, meat, or firearms.
The idea here is that if there's going to be this changeover into digital currencies, that the powers that be would still want to maintain control of that. Digital currencies are interesting in that they both pose a huge threat to freedom, but they also in themselves create opportunity for sovereignty amongst individuals and sovereignty amongst nations. And I think that that's extremely threatening to the financial houses of the world. So by being heavy-handed in the pandemic and linking mandates, vaccine mandates, to digital passports and to people's identities, and also into being able to use that as in a way of probing and testing how far they can push the idea of how they can control someone's bank accounts, like we saw in Canada, that ultimately that the threat, sort of runaway cryptocurrency, that now was their time where they could start reining that in and seeing how they could start owning that space.
So how does everything blow up? Well, you create all of this money over the last few years. You hold interest rates ridiculously low. Where does all that money go? All of that money went into assets and has blown assets up to levels that are irrational. Blown asset values into the lowest interest rates in human history, where housing prices double or triple in a year, where stock portfolios double or triple in a year, where cryptocurrency portfolios go up 10x. Forget about the recent drawdown in cryptocurrencies. That's irrelevant. What I'm getting at is that all of this money that has been created has found its way into massive asset price inflation. Houses are not supposed to double in a year, nor are stock portfolios. That's not the way markets work. Those are manias, those are bubbles, those are maybe the biggest bubble economy that we are sitting in the history of the world, all because of manipulation of interest rates and massive money creation, which has created massive distortions and misallocations of capital and distortions of prices in assets.
We're seeing an East versus West currency war, trade war, almost a hot war at this point. The petrodollar deal is effectively dead, and people just haven't realized it yet. The Great Reset is about to hit us, a planned demolition of everything that we've known. Our supply chain is falling apart. I could go on and on, but I don't think that there's going to be much of a dollar left to save very soon. It looks like they're going to shift us to a whole new system, some sort of social credit score based free money handout system where you get all of the, you know, planned free promises of a communist utopia as long as you have a good score with their Chinese style social credit system.
The experts you just heard from all agree that today's debt-based global financial system is fast approaching a breaking point. Prepare accordingly. The next episode of Breaking Point covers the global food collapse. You'll hear from experts who bring you critical analysis about crop failures, fertilizer shortages, and food riots that will spread as food inflation leads to famine. Watch for this episode on Brighteon.com. a free speech video platform that's free to join. And Brighteon.social is a community of like-minded individuals who are informed and ready for what's coming. Join these platforms for free and connect with others who are preparing for the breaking point. Watch for episode 2 of Breaking Point on Brighteon.com and other platforms.